Got Peter Mustin on the line. Peter, are you there? Can you read me?
Peace and blessings, man. What's up?
Hey, it's good to hear your voice and good to see you. I think I saw you this summer for like a little bit, but maybe it was like last year. I don't know. COVID times, man. It's all like it all blends together. No, I saw you last summer.
It was a couple months ago, actually.
It was Uptown. Yep. Yep, and back.
There we go.
Life felt more normal back then. Hey, are you on speakerphone? Just checking.
No, I'm
okay.
Not.
Just making sure. Are you out? Are you out walking your farm?
Yeah, I'm out here actually right now.
Well, and so you're on Woodbridge Farm. For folks who don't know, Peter, you're basically Jefferson County's one of its largest Black landowners, 24-acre farm,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's 26.7 acres, actually.
26.7. That, and you know every hectare of it intimately.
Yeah, this has been a relationship, you know, building this place for the last 2 years. It's just been a struggle. The land was pretty abused, and I acquired it, and it's just been a big effort to reclaim it and turn it into, you know, vital farmland for the community.
Yeah, when I met you many years ago, 2013 or so, you were working for Corona Farms back then as growing flowers, right?
I sure was, yeah. The Greenways, I moved up here shortly before I met you and had trouble finding a job. And, you know, I had a background in agriculture for years. And Robert and Darby Greenway graciously offered me a position at Corona Farms where I worked there for 4 years until, you know, other things came along and sadly we had to part ways.
Mm. Did you foresee yourself as a farmer in your adult years? Was that something that you wanted to do, or was it something you just happened into?
It was always something I wanted to do. You know, I grew up with you know, traditional Black grandparents who always gardened in their backyard, and so it was something that was a lost art. And I had a lot of opportunities to go to the country when I was younger and work on a lot of farms. And even today, people are like laughing that I knew in the city years ago. They're like, wow, you actually did it. You're actually having a farm now. And it's great. This has always been a dream. And yeah, man, like it's just so weird how life changes. You know, you're in the street corner one day, you know, breaking the law 1 minute, and next minute you're out here planting flowers and planting trees. And
Yeah. I mean, it's going from urban realities to like, you know, rural. It has its own different, I mean, there's good things and bad things, right? But for the most part, I think you and I are similar in that we, you know, it's like, we like people, but we also like should stay away from people sometimes.
Yeah. And that's my one problem. You know, I like to be part of a community, but at the same time, it's kind of hard to, especially in these areas, you know, where people like me really don't have a strong community base, or we're excluded from a lot of stuff. I don't know. You know, a lot of it's just the way the area is, and it's the way people are.
Yeah. And something that Grace and I talked about in the last hour was like, you can be like so outgoing and see this, you know, be the face of something, but really there's a part of you that just wants to be private and to kind of eschew other people. Like I feel like we're those folks who can be so social, but then we need to go recharge.
Yeah. Same thing with, you know, working this farm out here. There's a lot of times where I don't, you know, have time to talk to people or, yeah, I want everybody to come out and see the project, but like we're really busy a lot of times, and it's not a freak show. It's something where actually it's a dream. We're actually trying to, you know, bring the fruition, and it's like, yeah. So a lot of times the social pressures can be kind of productive.
Well, let's give the listeners a radio tour of your farm. You don't have to walk to all these places, right? Because 26.7 acres is no joke. But what is Woodbridge Farm, and you know, what was it before you bought it, and what are you shaping it into?
Well, currently it is we're right out here in Center Valley Road, right between Red Dog Farms and Finn River. We have about 2,500 feet of creek front, which we, through the Salmon Coalition and AmeriCorps, they just came out and planted 1,500 trees along the stream to increase the buffer and help shade it to protect the salmon. So we're pretty happy about that. We've been on the property for about 2 years now. When we were acquired the property, there was piles of junk and scrap everywhere, and you name it, trailers, tires, broken glass. So for the first year, we're pretty much just cleaning up the land and plowing the fields, trying to get ready for planting. And now, as you can tell from some of our pictures on Instagram or Facebook, we're actually making a move. We have mating geese out here, which I'm sure you can hear them in the background.
Are they mating right now?
Yeah. There's the females nesting. As
oh,
we
God.
Speak. A little cranky.
Can you get them a room?
No. They're cool. I'm in their room. Yeah, so we got geese, turkeys, chickens, llamas, partridge and pear trees. In April, we're going to get a couple hundred quail and probably 50 head of pheasant for eggs and meat. And Kelk, we just acquired our first tractor through Kitsap Kubota out there in Silverdale. They're really nice with us. We went up there the other day and talked to them, and they let us get away with financing our first tractor, which is like a milestone for us here because, you know, it's kind of hard to farm this kind of property and clean it up without having a new tractor. And
is that the tractor in the video on the GoFundMe?
No, that's my original tractor. That's John Henry. That's my 1941 Ford 9N. You know, he's a little tired and he doesn't do a lot of the stuff that a regular, you know, a good tractor should do. But next week there should be a nice shiny new Kubota showing up in my farm, which is super exciting. And most of that money came from the GoFundMe campaign to help us get this tractor here. So, yeah, you know, we're really grateful for that, and everybody that, you know, helped make it possible. We just can't express our gratitude. It's amazing.
Yeah, and you can find that GoFundMe by, you could go to GoFundMe.com and look for Healing and Growing Woodbridge Farm, or just Woodbridge Farm. And then you can also go to jcarf.org, and they have links on the splash page. And, you know, one of the things we talked about with Anya and with Grace is that, you know, reparations are love. Reparations are important, and reparations come in many different forms. And in my opinion, as a white person, and I speak for all white people, reparations are a duty that white people have, whether or not you have been actively racist or, you know, like been a member of the KKK. The fact is, being white is, it comes with benefits that you can't always see. And being able to reach out with, you know, a gift of money to folks, you know, like you, Peter, is something that helps stave off the institutional oppression that often prevents Black entrepreneurs like yourself from doing as much and having as much as other entrepreneurs who, with lighter skin, who may find much easier inroads to stuff like getting a tractor, like financing with a bank.
That's a lot of the problems we've been finding out here. It's we have a lot of barriers because, I don't want to say if it's skin color or not, but there's a lot of barriers and a lot of doors that people immediately slam shut when they see you coming. And it's a little frustrating sometimes. But, like, with the tractor, like, getting a tractor, you know, they really didn't want to finance it. They didn't really talk to me, but we sat down and worked out and they listened. And it's great when people can come to agreements like that. And especially, like, when you talk about reparations and Black entrepreneurships, and that is a real important part of, you know, area, especially in areas like this where Black people make up less than 1% of the population, and we don't have access, especially land ownership, especially Black farmers. There's a big Black farmer movement out here because farming is something that people of African descent, people of Latino descent, you know, people of Asian descent have done for years on their own, or even in America, you know. Slaves built the agricultural system in America, but yet we own, what, 0.8% of the land or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
So you know, that's what one of our big visions of Woodbridge is, to bring that awareness to people about Black ownership, Black land ownership, and Black stewardships. And it's really frustrating in areas like this because there aren't a lot of Black farms and there aren't a lot of programs to support young entrepreneurs such as Grace, you know, such as Jade, such as myself, who have business plans, and we have viable business plans, but we just can't get the funding or get the doors open. So that's what we're just trying to do out here. We're trying to make people more aware of the situation, and it seems to be working. I mean, we've gotten a lot of support.
Yeah.
It's just been great.
I mean, I think there's like a double-edged sword in Jeffco, right? Yes, it's predominantly white, but many of those folks are folks who realize that they have a responsibility to supporting people of color, to BIPOC people. And when they see folks doing projects like that, it's like, yes, I understand. You know, there was some great New York Times journalism in the last 2 years about black farmers like in Alabama and these other places where you see the ways that institutions will deny folks, like as you see, they see you coming through the door and they're like, huh, I don't know if this is something we can legitimately support. Even if you have like a long storied history of being a farmer, you know, there's these doors that just get shut in your face and you don't even know they were shut in your face half the time. It's something that white folks will come from a place, from a racist place, and not realize it, and make decisions based on race without realizing they've made a decision based on race. And that's the importance of anti-racism. And, you know, and also I think when we say reparations is love, it's learning love, and it is sort of a way to counteract, almost like a carbon tax, you know, for flying in an airplane where you offset the carbon somehow. You offset your abilities as a white person by supporting people of color and supporting you, Peter Mustin, and Woodbridge Farm. So tell me what kind of stuff do you hope to plant there in the coming years?
And you've got with our tractor. Oh man, you know me, I'm a flower guy. Everybody knows that. That's my big hashtag and my motto right now. Dime bags of dahlias, you know. It's like I said, this is, well, you know, like people are always so shocked. I'm so flippant about my past, but yeah, I was in prison for a number of years. I was an ex-drug dealer. And like, here I am now. I own more land than anybody in my family has ever owned. It's like 10 square city blocks or something, you know. For a kid from South Philly who used to fight over a street corner to stand on. I mean, yeah, so where aren't we going to grow?
Grow at all. But maybe not weed, because weed isn't that, like, economically viable at this point, especially outdoor weed.
No. No marijuana for us, you know. We're looking at some programs for industrial. We got some industrial hemp grants that we're looking at, so we might put over an acre or two, you know, to plant some industrial hemp and see how that works out. But mostly this year, we're going to concentrate on getting the flower garden back up. You know, I used to grow flowers professionally, and it's always been my passion. So right now, we're just trying to get the ground ready and racing nature because spring is right around the corner.
I've heard people talk about how like quinoa is actually like a pretty good crop for our area, and everyone's, Lord knows, eating lots of quinoa famous bowls right now. But yeah,
I'd be the green guy over there at Finn River, you know, Keith Kistler. He's come over and help us out, but he's got the grain program locked down here. I've been talking with him and looking into that a little bit, because yeah, he did, look, right across the road here, he does all kinds of stuff. They're just planting some kind of a perennial weed, I think, and yeah, he had quinoa out there a couple years ago. So we're looking at all kinds of options for, you know, sustainable agriculture also, you know, wild rice. One of my biggest passion is Afro-Indigenous, a lot of stuff that I grew up eating you don't see out here. You know, you don't see okra out here, you don't see people say you can't grow yams out here. There's a lot of stuff you can grow out here that people don't grow. So that's kind of stuff I'm going to concentrate on, you know.
That's really cool.
A lot of gourds, a lot of squash, a lot of beans, you know, a lot of corn varieties. Stuff that my ancestors probably grew.
Can you grow rice out here? Or there's kinds
of rice?
You can
grow wild rice out here, yeah.
Nice. I mean, that's my name, so I'm biased. So obviously you should grow rice. Okay, well, go for it.
Yeah, there's just a lot of stuff that we still need to do out here to get, you know, started, and the GoFundMe's been helping a lot of that. You know, we still have equipment to get and housing for the animals and, you know, just basic farm stuff.
Well, and people can find the GoFundMe if they go to jcarf.org. That's jcarf.org. And check it out, Healing and Growing Woodbridge Farm on GoFundMe. Peter, we're going to take a little musical break. You brought us a song today. Would you like to introduce it for us?
Yeah, it's Mahalia Jackson. I believe that's what it was?
Yep, you're right.
Lord, Don't Move the Mountain. It's one of my grandmother's favorite gospel songs, actually. God rest her soul.
What was your grandma's name?
Her name was Beatrice Lloyd.
Beatrice Lloyd?
Yeah, man, she was a saint.
Well, this one's going out to her. Lord, Don't Move the Mountain, Mahalia Jackson. And we'll be right back to talk to Peter about more cool stuff and how you can support Black entrepreneurs in Jefferson County. So hang tight. And this is Filter KPTZ 91.9 FM, Port Townsend.
Fridays at 3 p.m. on KPTZ.
I'm Jackie Gales with. Join me for the 25th anniversary edition of Black Radio Telling It Like It Was from PRX and the Smithsonian, honoring Black Radio's role in African American history and culture.
Black Radio Telling It Like It Was, a six-part series with original host Lou Rawls and new narration from producer Jackie Gales Webb. Fridays at 3 p.m. following Filter.
Following Filter, that's right. That's a really cool new show going on for the next, I think, 8 weeks, maybe seven now. So definitely stay tuned at 3 p.m. Don't touch that dial. So we're talking to Peter Mustin from Woodbridge Farm. I have a very important question for you, Peter.
Yes, sir.
Who is the best Star Trek captain?
Oh, gosh. You know who that is. Captain Sisko.
Sisko for life. I mean, and to be fair, Commander Sisko, right? But, like, he was the captain of my heart, of that space station. And who's the worst?
Oh, Picard, by far.
100% the worst. Killed more people than anyone else. I wanted to talk to you about this because I think it was one of the first conversations you and I ever had passionately was when we realized, you know, we both had a love for Sisko and that we had to argue with these people who were like, well, Picard's obviously the best. And
wow, Sisko is the most underrated Star Trek leader of all time. I mean, come on.
Is 100%.
He captained a warship.
Yeah, he's got the Defiant. And he, like everything he does, I mean, he adopts Bajor as his new homeworld. You know, he goes in, he becomes like a folk hero for these people, a prophet. Really like fighting, you know, for the underdogs, like on these multiple levels that show, and Sisko being the biggest part of it and the most important part of why that show was so great. He was absolutely the best. And Picard was like, just, he was letting people down, like, and they didn't make it a big point of it, but man, did he kill a lot of people in those episodes.
And also for me growing up, there wasn't a lot of, you know, Black TV stars to look up for in a lot of those positive roles. You know, most of my role models growing up were pimps or drug dealers or, you know, stereotypical whatever, you know, or just whitewashed TV sitcoms. Sisko was actually a cool brother to watch, and, you know, he loved his son, and he was a good family man. That was a good show for me growing up. I loved it.
He would cook food, like cook real food, not just replicate it, you know, and the importance of food and all these things. You're right, like seeing a Black person in a position of power in sci-fi was hugely important for me, too, to be like, hey, you know, maybe the way the world is, maybe the way it's working, you know, like, I mean, maybe there's something, you know, you need to think about more in terms of what's possible and what is the reality and what we're trying to find in the future. And then lately, I don't know if it was a revelation. I'm sure it's been talked about. Like, the end of Deep Space Nine has Sisko basically being imprisoned for the rest of, for eternity, pretty much, in the wormhole, and he does it in this sort of sacrifice to keep Bajor alive, to keep, you know, DS9 going, but also to preserve the planet Bajor, and the Black, you know, this Black man in prison for eternity, being the end of this show. I was just like, wow, that is so dark, but it is so real. You know, it was a real moment to say, hey, like, whoa, God, you know what. And I don't even know if it was intentional, but I think about it so being so relevant for our current times, and Black folks especially going to prison for nonviolent crimes like drug possession, you know, for long, long times.
Yeah, you know, a lot of, like myself, I was I received a lot of education via the penal system. I'm not saying I'm innocent and, you know, I didn't deserve some correction, but a lot of the stuff that happened was out of my control, and, you know, things have a way of spiraling like that. You know, and a lot of people understand that when they say, oh, well, why are there so many Black people in prison? And you figure, you know, a lot of us don't have family support when we go to court. A lot of us don't have money for good lawyers. A lot of the places where the crimes are committed, the legal public defenders are overworked, and a lot of them really don't care. And that's like all that compiles to bigger issues. You know, we have to put out the little fires all over the place, and yeah, the more people realize that, the better things will get.
Have you been following the news coming out of the Washington State Supreme Court around drug possession?
Yes. And I'm happy, they're trying to make it's just more than drug possession, though. You have to figure out why, you have to provide jobs, you have to provide education, you have to provide housing. You know, you just can't say we have a drug problem. You have to look at why we have a drug problem. And there's a lot of it leads to mental health. And even in this community, there's a big mental health issue and a big drug problem that people sweep under the rug and then they'll talk about. I mean, I've had multiple friends in the last couple of years pass away from drug use in this small community.
Me
and a
too.
Lot of people just act like it doesn't happen or it's not here or they don't want to see it. But, you got to figure if stuff like that happens here, what's going on in bigger communities where people don't have access to friends and, support and.
Yeah. I'm hopeful that this Washington Supreme Court decision can actually be a step towards ending the war on drugs. I mean, because currently right now, as of, 2 days ago, there is no valid law prohibiting simple possession in Washington. And the Jefferson County prosecutor, he terminated all the simple possession cases in Jefferson County. And these are nonviolent offenses, and things that make us say, hey, why were we prosecuting these people in the first place? Let's give people help, not hurt them. Because you just hurt people by putting them through the penal system in a lot of ways. I mean,
you're hurting them, but you're hurting your family. Now you're taking away a son from his sick mother or father. You're taking away a father from his daughter and wife or son and wife. You know what I mean? So it's not just you're hurting that person. Prisons actually hurt a community.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't care if they provide jobs and everything like that. You got to think about that. Like when you're breaking up a home. So now, if they have money problems and the father or the brother, whoever is out selling drugs and gets possession charged, at least that money might have been going to his family. You know what I mean? It might have been going to rent. It might have been going to medication. It might have been going to a lot of things. He didn't have access to a job. So when you imprison people, you are also in prison. The family goes with him. And that's something I learned from all my years in prison. Because when I was in prison, I wasn't just there by myself. I had taken my mother with me. I had taken my sister with me. I had taken everybody who cared about me, with me. So it wasn't just me sitting in a jail cell. It was everybody I loved sitting there with me. Yeah, it was people who depended on me, or just needed me to be there, and I couldn't be there because I made some mistakes, or the laws were too harsh, or I had a bad lawyer, or, there's lots of there's lots of aspects that people just don't look at.
Well, and you're so right. I think a lot of times, especially when you're faced with an economy that benefits, white people primarily, with a job market that primarily benefits white people, like some of the only options to folks when they're poor or not having the same opportunities as white people is crime. It's like, you're going to do crime. And the crime was invented in the first place in order to put people in prison, in order to make a less equitable world. That was the design of it. It was simply, we can't keep black people out of our workforce, but we can create circumstances that put them inordinately and unfairly in prison. I mean, that's the entire war on drugs right there. Yeah.
Well, all they're doing was creating another disenfranchised workforce. I mean, in the South, it happened. We went from being slaves to being sharecroppers to building railroads and work camps and, a lot of these penal prisons. Even today, prisons like CCA, Crossroads Corporation of America, it's a private prison corporation who employs thousands of prisoners and pays them, 35 cents an hour to build missile components. They do all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Also, these prisons go to communities where there's no jobs and infrastructure. So you build a prison, some tiny podunk town somewhere. Now you have a place for all the good people to come work, That brings in hotels for the people that come into the prison. You know, that brings in restaurants to serve and gas stations to service those people who are coming to the prison to visit people. Yeah, so it's a big, like, prison is a big industry here. And that's part of the reason why the government doesn't let it go, because you start shutting down prisons, it's not where you're going to put all these people who commit crimes. Now it turns into, how do we support these communities where these prisons are based?
Yeah. Yeah, it's exactly like you say. And I mean, obviously we got off on a tangent. And No, it's good. This is good.
Subject for me,
this is what the show's about. Like, for me, this isn't an interview show. This is a conversation show. It's about talking these things out and finding these details. And I think something I appreciate about you is you're able to relate all these different, you know, you're able to go from like pop culture to like race, like we all are. You know, you do it in such a way that like sometimes I'm like, wow, how did we get there? You know, Peter. And sometimes you do it while you're in a T-Rex costume, which is also pretty stunning to see.
Yeah, I've been waiting to break that out again.
Are you gonna maybe you could do a farm tour in it?
I was thinking about something with the turkeys or the swans.
The geese aren't gonna like it, man.
They don't like anything, unfortunately. I don't know if you have much experience with geese.
I don't.
But they're pretty grouchy.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Well, maybe the T-Rex can keep them in line better. maybe not.
I think the chickens might dig it though.
Yeah, because they're like, they'll be just like, "Hey, great grandpa." Oh man. Well, we got a little time left, and I want to talk about just sort of how people can support you, Peter Mustin, in what you're doing in Woodbridge. There's the GoFundMe, but like,
there's a GoFundMe. We're gonna start actually having work parties in the next couple of weeks. We have a webpage set up right now, so people can apply for our mailing list. We're gonna start putting out monthly newsletters. And because, like I said, there's still a lot of refuse and trash, you know, just small bits of stuff on the property. So, you know, we can use a lot of help picking that stuff up, sorting recyclables, filling the dumpster. Pretty soon we're going to need help weeding and reclaiming, you know, a lot of the abused lands around the woods. We'd like to get that all cleaned up around the stream. And yeah, so we're going to, like, people can look us up on our website, Woodbridge Farm, and sign up for our newsletter, and yeah, come out and give us a hand, and you know, try to make a good thing out of it.
I just found it and signed up, woodbridgefarm.net, and there's a little place to put your email in and click the button, and so folks, do that if you can help. I mean, I'm down for a work party. I will try and actually be useful, but I am able to pick stuff up and I am able to carry things, you know, as long as it's just grunt work, not detail work. You'll want me on your team. If it involves detail, I am not a details person. I'm just a grunt at the front of the line, basically, but I'm excited to help. And that's a cool thing that you're doing. And especially,
unfortunately, at this stage, that's where the stage of the help we need. We need a lot of grunt work, a lot of muscle and bodies.
That's, yeah, well, bring it. So, I mean, if you're finding, you know, reparations are love, so supporting Black entrepreneurs is super important, which you can do it by going to jcarf.org and supporting Grace or supporting Peter's GoFundMes. But if you're low on funds, there are other ways to volunteer. So, you know, don't be afraid to go to woodbridgefarm.net and get on that mailing list and see about when a work party might be happening in the next couple weeks.
Yeah, we even take well wishes at this point, you know what I mean?
So it's good. Thoughts and prayers? You take thoughts and prayers?
Yeah, we take all that right now.
Well, okay, so one last question. How do you grow walnuts?
Oh, man. Yeah, we got a nice little walnut grove going on out here. Pretty much, we just got some walnuts and germinated them and got lucky. And Mother Nature and timing. I mean, you can buy walnut trees, but yeah,
but they're not necessarily gonna flower with walnuts.
Oh, they're already flowering.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, they're already flowering. We'll have our first walnut crop this year, actually.
Oh, that's so cool. So
yeah, I'm pretty excited. We had a small one last year, but you know, with irrigation problems and you know, the problems with the grass, it was kind of hard to keep the trees healthy. But yeah, we're working on it right now, so
Oh, that's
yeah. We'll have all kinds of good stuff in the market. Hopefully, late summer.
No, that's so rad. Well, late summer as soon as that. So it just feels like I know COVID's not ending, but like there are maybe good things on the horizon. Maybe we don't have to be like mired in the muck. And I mean, have you found? I know you have. Personally, like, you know, your love of Jefferson County has also been tempered by occasionally feeling like an outsider here. And I wonder, in the last few months, have you felt that change? Have you felt anything better happening? Are people, you know, after George Floyd and all the protests, are people starting to reach out more and starting to be more supportive?
A lot of people have been really supportive and helpful and more aware. And unfortunately, it takes things like George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, to bring attention, you know. It's a little frustrating, too, because I don't want that to be the cause of why people, like, want to help out, support.
Yeah.
But in the same run, they need to, because a lot of these people are part of the problem. It's kind of weird, because, like, you know me, I'm a little, I can be loud now sometimes, and most times I'm shy and bashful, but this has just been a big eye-opening experience.
Mm. You just by a side note, you're the best kind of loudmouth, and every time I've ever hung out with you, I've had a good time. So,
I've had a good time with you, man. I can't wait till this is over, you know.
That'll be weird.
All this being sequestered away from people.
I'm going to be bumming Newports.
Oh, gosh. I ate in a restaurant for the first time in forever last night.
Oh, really?
Amazing.
Oh, where'd you go?
Yep. The Castle.
Nice.
Yeah, it was my birthday yesterday. We went out, me and my business partner, Cameron Jones, went up and, you know, had a nice meal and relaxed for a little bit.
Oh, my God, that's awesome. Happy birthday, Peter.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Do you feel old or do you feel young?
Oh, gosh, I feel tired, good sir.
Well,
you know, I'm 20... down here, I'm looking at these trees right now, and I'm thinking, you know, wow, in 20 years, I'm like, at this tree, and I'm like, wow, I'm going to be past 60-something, but... Mm. You know, good Lord willing, I'll be able to do it, and I'll still be in the same beautiful piece of property doing what I'm doing now.
Well, it makes me happy to hear, and I'm so excited for you, and I'm here to support, and I hope listeners are thinking the same. They can go to jcarf.org to support Peter and Woodbridge Farm. And
I just want to say, like, thank you to everybody that has supported us and has, you know, come out to give us a hand, and like. Yeah, and I'm so grateful and blessed, and that's one of the reasons that I love being in this community, because if I was anywhere else in the world, I don't know if this would be possible. Mm. And this isn't the first time this has happened, you know. We had a house fire, it was just, 7 years ago almost. We had a house burned down a couple of years ago, and the community came together then and, you know, got me and my roommate back on our feet, and just the whole outpouring of love and caring is just overwhelming. I just can't believe that people are so generous and caring.
Mm. Well,
I just want to thank everybody from the bottom of my heart, man. Yeah.
You deserve it and you've earned it. So do you have any final shout outs before we send you back onto your 26.7 acres?
Dad back the Gaia's, mama. He's doing it, baby.
He's doing it. He's doing it. Your son is doing it. All right, Peter, much love to you and to your family and to your farm.
Thanks, man.
We'll talk again soon.
I really appreciate
We'll do an all Star Trek episode soon. Okay.
Oh yeah. Put me in for that.
All right. You're in. All right. Later, Peter.
All right, man. Have a good afternoon.
You too.